Okay, I think I'm ready.
I think we're ready. On. I have no idea. I haven't done this in so long. Oh, I think we are definitely on. Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our May podcast. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by down below. We got Matt Sikowski and Rocco Miller. We got David Griggs. We got John Tytel. It has been a long time since we've spoken, a long time since we've done one of these. I don't even know what the hell I'm doing anymore, but how's everyone doing?
I was having a perfectly nice summer until you showed up, Chad.
So David, you can tell us what's happened in college basketball the last 6 weeks, all right?
Well, yeah, it's just been great. And again, we can't say it enough. Congratulations to Tim Miles, head coach of the 2017-2018 national champion Nebraska Cornhuskers. They beat Michigan by more than Villanova did.
Villanova won the championship. I think we covered that last month, though. Let's go on into things. You know, this is the off season. A lot's been going on here. Off the court.
They beat Michigan. They blew them out.
on the court. If you want to watch basketball, you're watching NBA only. I think Tytel, you're watching some NBA, right? Who's winning the title this year?
I wish my Celtics would. They're currently up 13 in the second quarter, so I like our chances of making it through the NBA Finals, but the Golden State or Houston winner is going to have so much more talent and more health that I don't think we can get it done.
All right. Well, I'm not even watching NBA anymore since my Sixers were eliminated, but let's talk about things that have been happening. And before we came on the air, we were discussing there's a couple of commissions out there in college basketball or college and NCAA, a Rice Commission, a Knight Commission, Hoops HD Commission. I think David,
yes,
you're starting
that. We will be submitting our recommendations to the NCAA.
Now Tytel, you got to go to one of these commissions, correct?
The Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics met at the Newseum in DC a few weeks ago, and I was fortunate enough to get an invite, although it was open to the public, so I don't feel so special. It was neat. They had
I got a restraining order telling me not to.
The commission itself is very impressive. You have former players who became Hall of Famers like David Robinson. You have ADs. You have conference commissioners. You have a little of everything. Jay Billis was there on a panel. They had Phil Martelli. So it was really a fun time and action-packed with a bunch of great speakers. I don't know that they resolved anything, but it's just nice to hear all the different sides of the story and the aspects of people on different issues within the sport of college basketball.
Well, I think that the commission that's pressing for some changes in college basketball is this other one that was headed up by Condoleezza Rice, which came out with some recommendations, I believe, the end of April. One of them I thought was kind of interesting is they want to get rid of the one-and-done rule, which, Rocco, let me bring you in on this. First of all, it's not really an NCAA decision, but let's say the NBA got rid of that. Do you think that does anything to help college basketball getting rid of one and dones?
Yeah, it's a good question, Chad. And I think the NCAA and Condoleezza Rice's commission is somewhat dependent on the college basketball community, whether it be fans or guys that cover the sport or people that work in the sport, to be a little bit naive on what's actually going on. So in my opinion, I don't think it actually solves much of the problem, because if you look at, just take the FBI report and some of the names that have been dropped just for, you know, sake of argument, majority of those guys were not one and done guys. These are guys that are sophomores, juniors, been well into their college careers. And if coaches being tied to AAU coaches or middle people and passing payments down to players, it's going to be in the coach's best interest to keep that player at the school as long as possible. So if they're trying to clean up that part of the game, I know this is a much bigger topic than that. It really doesn't solve anything. It really just pushes the buck up the chain a little bit. And we've had the one and done gone in the past, and this has been a 20-year problem or more of illegal payments going to players, or not having players being able to receive income for their name and likeness, which is another topic. So long story short, I would say no, it won't make too big of an impact whatsoever if they are able to accomplish that.
Go on that since any of us were born.
Exactly.
Right. I just, like, the Rice Commission was put together to fix college basketball. That was sort of the whole objective of it. And there is so much to work there. I mean, it's sort of like name your favorite Tim Miles moment. I mean, there's just countless, countless things you can choose from. And what they decide to lead with is the one and done rule, which is, first of all, not even the NCAA's rule. Secondly, out of the 353 teams with 13 players on them each, that comes out to what, 353 times whatever that is, roughly 4,000 players or more. They decide to focus on something that affects less than 10 of them. So roughly 0.02% of the players are affected by this rule. And this is what they lead with. So they lead with something that A, isn't an NCAA rule, and B, affects virtually no one. Very, very nicely done. And it's asinine to think that it isn't as if the one and done rule goes away, we're still going to have players in inter-college basketball that have a big freshman year that leave after playing 1 year. Before the so-called one-and-done rule existed, we still had players. I think Luol Deng played for 1 year and left. There's some others that played for 1 year and left. It wasn't unusual at all. Right. So why is it that everybody goes nuts over the one-and-done rule? I mean, I think that there's people out there that their diplomatic solution to Israel and Palestine is to get rid of the one-and-done rule.
And it's not like that they can't go and play somewhere else. I mean, look at what – I mean, here we go, Lonzo Ball this early. But you know, look at what he did with his other kids.
We need to get rid of Lonzo Ball. Like, why didn't anybody on any commission recommend that?
But you can take the kids overseas for a year, let them play, and they've satisfied the NBA one-and-done rule if it's all about the money. So I think you're right that – I don't know that that's a solution, but Tytel, is can that help, or is there something else that they should be focusing it on, or do we just not know?
No, so I don't know for sure. One of the things that frightened me, frankly, was I was reading something. I forget which commission made the recommendation. I think it was the Condoleezza Rice-led Commission on College Basketball, that if the NBA will not get rid of the one-and-done rule, because as we said, it's their rule, that maybe colleges will respond by something as draconian as a return to a world of freshman ineligibility, which I still don't believe it, even though I read it on the internet, so it must be true. It just seems impossible. Can you imagine, like, these McDonald's All-Americans going to college and they're like, oh, we're going to sit you for a year because you're ineligible? It's insane.
Right. We'll start freshman teams, so we have a whole second college basketball league to watch, right?
Great. No, we don't. We do not want that. The other thing is, like, okay, what is a one and done? It's a player that leaves after their freshman year. Well, there's probably 100 players that leave after their freshman year, but they just leave because they're not getting enough playing time, or they're not happy, or they decide they don't want to play anymore, or they decide they don't want to be in school anymore, or they flunk out. And that's a problem. Like, when you look at fixing college basketball holistically, how about the guys that aren't leaving to take a multi-million dollar job? But anyway, like, you know, great, great work by the Rice Commission. They're focusing on something that means absolutely nothing, and that isn't even an NCAA rule anyway.
Well, my understanding, David, is that there were two other recommendations they had. They also wanted to increase the penalties to schools for violating the rules as opposed to the individuals, and they wanted to require certification for agents and certain camps.
Yeah, for camps and agents. That was the – okay, let's look at increasing penalties, because we had kind of gotten away from that. I mean, schools still get punished, but by and large – they have been targeting the individuals, and their thinking was that they didn't want to hurt the student athletes who are basically collaterally punished for something they had nothing to do with. If you look at Tennessee, it was just one disaster after another, with Bruce Pearl getting in trouble, getting a show cause, Donnie Tindall, am I saying that name right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who basically got three schools in trouble, Morehead State a little bit, Southern Miss a lot, and Tennessee even more. But again, those schools really weren't punished that severely, but the individuals were. Like, Donnie Tindall's out of the. It's not Donnie Tindall, is it?
Yeah,
it is. It is. Okay.
I think it's like 10-year show cause.
Yeah, a 10-year show cause, which effectively ends his career. What the commission recommended was essentially going the other way, to where Tennessee and everybody that at the school that had nothing to do with it after all the guilty parties were fired, would essentially be on probation for 5 years. And I just have to ask you, as someone that causes a lot of trouble, do you not understand that people who cause trouble care nothing about how much the school that's firing them is in trouble?
Matt, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, is this backwards by rights?
I think most of their stuff is backwards and naive and not in the 21st century. This is probably less of that.
Really?
I think, plus, like, Tennessee, you, like, Dieter, like, he already had a little bit of red flags when you hire him. If you had, like, Auburn, when you hired Bruce Pearl, good Lord, you knew he had history. And that, so, and if it happens again, well, I'm not feeling so sorry for you. I think you're hiring them for a reason, and you don't care how you win. You don't want to know how. You just want to win. And that's that. Or like, or Louisville, how many years they kept that years in violations they kept Pitino on? As far as I'm concerned, if they got the death penalty, it would not be too harsh of a punishment.
Well, that one.
I guess what that comes out to me is I almost feel worse when, especially when it's a penalty that gets announced mid-season. I mean, what happened at Louisville a couple of years ago? You know, when mid-season suddenly they're ineligible.
Well, they declared they did that to themselves.
They did themselves, but still, it's you know I think that that's where we're punishing. I mean, you punish some kids there that really did not deserve to be punished, right. Yeah, they self-impose it, but they self-impose it because if they hadn't self-imposed it, there would have been a ban anyhow.
Right. And, you know, there might be a longer one coming, depending on how that goes. I don't...
But if they behave themselves afterwards, it'd be a different story.
Right. Now, don't misunderstand me. Like, I'm all for holding programs accountable. And, like, most of the time when the school gets a ban, I don't really think it's that out of bounds. I mean, Louisville was disappointing because it happened in the middle of the year and it was self-imposed and they essentially lawnmowed over the players that had nothing to do with it. But at the same time, I think that it's a little ridiculous to think that, Kelvin Sampson was all that upset because of the trouble Indiana got in. He didn't care about what happened to Indiana. He only cared about what happened to himself. Same with Bruce Pearl. Same with all of these people that have been given show causes or been suspended or dealt with severely. I just don't think at the very least, I don't think punishing the schools and the programs prevents it because the individuals doing it don't care what happens to the schools.
Well, what about this other end of things, Rocco? Here about the certifications for agents and these camps and everything. Is that something that can have any effect?
I'm not too positively sure. I used to, in a previous life, work with a lot of NCAA sports camps. So I do know it can be a big revenue generator for coaches. However, it's not too common across the majority of programs to be an access channel for players in recruitment. So I don't know how big of an impact that will make, to be honest with you. And I know that the camp scene changes year after year. There's always new things coming along, but I don't know how big of an impact that would make. I honestly think with the whole Rice Commission overall, it was essentially just a way for the NCAA to put a quick fix together to respond to the media when the FBI investigation story was broke. And then basically just kind of put the whole country on wait until the end of the season, then we say, okay, we'll announce right after the tournament. And then in April, we're basically going to do about 2 weeks worth of work and put something together. But I don't think any of this was very well thought out. I think they basically put all the obvious problems together and somewhat obliged that they are problems, but they didn't really come with solutions. I think they took the approach of blaming the other associations like the AAU and NBA for many of the problems today, and they didn't take the opportunity to take accountability, which I believe they should have. And then I think overall it was kind of embarrassing for the whole organization and the commission. I guess the only good that did come out of that I liked was the players having the option to return to school if they do not get drafted. I do think that would be good for the sport. But outside of that, it really, really was a pretty big disappointment.
Well, college basketball in general, it's a bunch of greedy and selfish assholes that know what's going on and that are smart. And these greedy, these greedy, selfish assholes are governed by idiots who have no clue what's going on. And those idiots decided to put together a commission that gave them bad advice that they have every intention of acting on.
Tytel, I see you smiling there. Is there a solution, though? What should the commission have come up with? Do we know? I mean,
that's a good question. I like the idea of penalties because I'm a penalty guy. So, like, you shouldn't go to jail if you jaywalk, but if you knew that the penalty for jaywalking was going to jail, would you jaywalk? Answer, no. I would like to ask Rocco, though, like, in terms of the thing where if you don't get drafted, you get to come back. I like the concept in terms of it's such a big roll of the dice for guys who think they're going to make it, get bad advice, and then are screwed. But you foresee the situation where, like, 1,000 players declare because there's no penalty because if they don't get drafted, they go home?
Well, I think today, isn't there a rule where you can only declare twice total for your career? So if you do it once, is it, or is it three times?
I think it is actually three now.
Is it three now? Okay. I mean, you would definitely want to keep that rule in place to make sure that, you know, same guys aren't doing it every year. Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe we knock that down to two if this is in place. There's got to be some type of compromise, right?
Well, Rocco, are we talking about even if you hire an agent and you don't get drafted?
No. Well,
okay.
That's a good question, actually. I think they shouldn't have to decide if they need to hire an agent until after the draft, right? If they are good enough to get drafted, keeps their name in the mix, and then they can wait that out and then make the decision if they're going to sign. I do think the suggestion the commission made would be as if they did not sign with an agent, just to be clear. I think
let you undo your agent signing.
Right. Because at that point you've accepted cash, and the way the rules are still written, you can't do that.
Right. They did recommend, and I would actually be in favor of this, that you're allowed to have contact with agents. You're just not allowed to enter in any sort of, which now you're not even really allowed to do that, but you're just not allowed to enter into any sort of financial agreement with them or contractual agreement with them while you forfeit your eligibility.
Yeah. And David, the commission, thanks. You refreshed my memory there. So the Rice Commission actually said they wanted to certify agents.
Yeah.
To be able to come and meet with NBA prospects during the season, and they have to be certified by the NCAA ahead of time, so they can have that contact. Obviously, they're not allowed to receive payment, but that gives them the guidance they need to make a better decision. But obviously, that could introduce a lot of new problems.
Well, and one of the things is, like, who would be tasked with certifying them? Because I don't know if you all have noticed this or not about the NCAA. They have a tendency to get things wrong every now and then.
Like I said, it just introduces a bunch of new problems. And
again. Well, Matt, let me give you the final word on this. Anything else that you think can be done to help solve the problems that Rice missed out on?
I think you need to get the reality of the player's likeness is worth something, and that to set up a system how, and that maybe just you build a trust you collected after you go pro. Actually, for the draft, kind of like the hockey model, you're eligible to be drafted any time, and you go pro when you feel like it and sign a pro contract. I think we need to look at forward-thinking things. I think everything here, this is backwards, like trying to set things back to the 60s, 70s, 80s, like, we need to be looking forwards, not backwards. Like, you can maybe push it back in the bottle for a little bit, but eventually these players have clearly shown they have value. I mean, like it or not, Brian Bowen was worth $100,000 to go to Louisville. I mean, we need, like I said, need real-world solutions, not try to go backwards in time. But it feels like I'm talking about the U.S. political scene too, but hey.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, talking about money to players, I think this really kind of ties in and we hope it doesn't happen, but Tytel, the Supreme Court came down and said that sports gambling has got to be allowed in all the states, subject to certain congressional and state-by-state decisions. Living here in New Jersey myself, we are within the matter of weeks, I think, from having our first sports books opening. As soon as the state says okay, they're in the casinos. The casinos are ready for them. We got a few new casinos opening here, even that are ready with sports books. So, I know that there's a concern there is with more sports gambling that's legalized, is there going to be more of an incentive for trying to fix something? And do you think that concern is real?
It is a real concern. To start, I hate the idea of legalized sports betting. It seems like I'm not like a guy from like the Prohibition era who like gambling is a sin and it's going to like corrupt our youth or anything. I do think that it has caused problems for many people who don't know when to stop. And I think that we've seen like scandals in college basketball and other sports of kids taking money to throw games. I think our test, AKA Meta World Peace, just came out and said he was offered $50,000 when he was at St. John's. It's just something that I think should not be there because there is a potential for bad actions. That being said, if I had the chance to like bet on Villanova or bet against Princeton, like sign not. I think it's a bad idea, but like I see why people want to do it. And if I don't know exactly what the money that is raised is going to be used for, does it go in a casino's pocket? Does it go to fund state education and roads and stuff? Like, I don't know all the extent of it. So I'm willing to give it a shot, I guess, but put me in the anti-gambling crowd, please.
I mean, actually, we're hearing here in New Jersey a significant tax is what I'm hearing about on sports gambling to the point that I don't know that's going to do anything to put all the bookies out of business because it's kind of like, hey, I can get a lot better deal by not doing the legalized sports gambling. And well, David, that's kind of one of the points here is that you've got to have the gambling one way or another.
Now right. And again, we don't have legalized sports gambling, but what we have is illegal sports gambling. And that is, just as rampant. And I don't know how much it really makes anybody any more susceptible than they already are. Like, whoever it was that offered our test Meta World Peace $50,000, if that's true, and it probably is, could have very easily been placing the bets illegally. And we already have sports gambling in Las Vegas and in some other places. I don't think it's going to change that much. I could be wrong, but I just don't see it being that much of an impact. The NCAA tournament, I think part of the popularity, at least in part, is the gambling element to it. You're in the office pools, you watch the games. I mean, as much as we like the excitement and the drama of it, I think a lot of the eyeballs are people that are there that are watching because they're in some sort of jackpot. It could actually make the game slightly more popular. Does it make it more corrupt? I don't think so, but maybe. But I do know this, not having legalized gambling doesn't make it any less corrupt.
That's a good point, Rocco, about making the game more popular. I've been to Vegas for the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, and I don't know if you have as well, but it's a hell of a scene. And to be able to, have a chance now to maybe even have that in my backyard here in Atlantic City and other states as well can help the popularity, can't it?
You would think. I mean, it's definitely big business. And yes, I've done Vegas quite a few times, actually, for that first weekend, majority of my 20s, actually. So very well aware of how crazy that is, how much money they take in. I think it's something like six times more than Super Bowl weekend. So it's obviously big money when it comes to March, but you get people engaged throughout the season like we already are. The popularity can certainly go up. I understand. I thought John Titel made a lot of good points on the anti-gambling side. I also thought, David, you made great points kind of in the middle there. And I think I'm probably closer to David. I'm kind of in the wait-and-see mode on this. I've spent some time in Europe, so I know that you can bet on anything and everything when you're in London, for example. And I mean, pretty much every corner there's like a 7-Eleven where you can make a sports bet. And so we've all heard about the FIFA scandals and the soccer scandals. So inevitably, something like that will probably break out within the first 5 to 10 years, maybe multiple times. But it doesn't mean that's not already going on today. So. Again, I think it's wait and see. I think it makes a lot of sense for the NCAA at the end of the day is a business. And I think, for the entire popularity of sports, it benefits everybody. One place where I know you won't be able to make a bet is Utah, because sports betting, it will forever be illegal there. But everybody has a chance.
This is going to be an ignorant question you all are going to laugh at. Like, when you go into a sports book, I've actually never been inside one. How many games can you bet on? I mean, like, you know, because we could probably clean up on Under the Radar. Just saying.
My experience in Vegas is pretty much anything is open.
Really?
And yeah, if you're talking about a regular season game between Murray State and Belmont, it's probably going to be on. There's probably going to be a line for it at the sports books.
Wow.
I may not have found one of those lines during my past year.
Matt, what did you thought on the whole thing there? Yeah.
No, well, from that statement, it comes a big shock that I am very pro gambling. That, like, I think it should have been legalized for years. I'm hoping this brings online poker aboard, because that should also be legal, and that at least online poker, like, hold'em, and that is not a game of chance in that. But, like,
I'm a Jersey guy where it is legal, so, but you go ahead.
Yeah, no.
Wait, poker? I thought poker was legal.
Oh, no. There's been an online ban since, like, 06, 07.
It is
legal. Well, what is poker? Okay, I thought you – never mind. I don't know.
It's legal in the casinos, but you can't play it online.
Yeah, big gambling person right over here, as you can tell.
It is legal in New Jersey, but you have to be a New Jersey resident and using a New Jersey website. But it is.
Oh, so it's sort of like Pornhub. You have to click that you're 18. I got it.
Yeah. So go ahead, Matt. I cut you off there.
No, the point shaving thought, it'll probably be a factor again. Like, if these players who have clearly said there's a market to show up, they're worth something. In that, if they're not making anything from their likeness or that, and they get offered a point shave, they'll probably, a couple of them might take them up on it. I mean, they did, Northwestern did, Arizona State guys did, BC has, I think NYU way back. So, like, it's happened most decades. I'm surprised, like, in the 2000s, you actually haven't heard one. That, like, I think Arizona State in the 90s was the last well-known one, but.
The University of San Diego, I think, had one in the 2000s with Brandon Johnson.
There's been hints of what. I don't know if anything's really fleshed out from those, at least as much as the Arizona State one of the mid-90s. But
that was a big one, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, like, I think, put it this way, I think gambling should be legal. I'm very happy it is. I think it will be in a lot of states. I think eventually we'll be here in Illinois, although. We'll be behind on that, even though the state can use every cent it can get.
Right. And that's what I mean, I like the tax revenue side of it. And I guess another thing is that I think if it's casino gambling or sportsbook gambling, isn't it a little safer? Because they're not going to let you – they're not going to extend you any credit. Like, you actually have to have the money in order to bet. So they're not going to send Rocky after you to break your legs if you're unable to pay in pound or whoever.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of wrapped up that topic. I don't know. There's a few other things we wanted to touch on. I guess let me mention one of these real quick. We kind of on a more somber note. We did lose David. We lost Mike Slive in the past few weeks here. Former SEC, I think also Conference USA at one point commissioner.
Yeah, definitely Conference USA at one point.
Yeah, former selection committee member. Did a lot of good for the SEC. He was there when they expanded. He was really there when he pushed to he really pushed the league to amp up its basketball. I mean, it was always a power conference, but I think he saw the value, especially after being on the committee, of what basketball could do. And I think it did elevate it quite a bit outside of Kentucky. I mean, Kentucky was always there, but he was one of the best ones, and you kind of hate to see him go. I didn't obviously agree with everything he did and didn't always like what he was doing, but he was certainly very successful and did a lot of good for the leagues he was worked with.
Tytel, did you have a chance to talk to him? Or
I got to talk to the ACC guy, who I want to say is Swofford, but I forget. I don't think I ever got to talk to Slive, but as I know you guys are big fans of a certain conference, I'd like to also mention that he was the sports commissioner in 1991 of a little conference called the Great Midwest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Well, let me run through everybody else here. See if there's anything else we want to discuss or any other final thoughts we have. And Tytel, while I'm on you, why don't I let you kick things off here?
So going back to the one and done issue that we talked about earlier, if you look at the NBA draft, which is about less than a month away now, you might see a lot of zero and dones. Three possible first round picks. Michael Porter Jr., he played 53 minutes for Missouri, and it wasn't due to eligibility issues. It was due to injury. but he could be a top five pick. Mitchell Robinson, he played against Porter in the McDonald's All-Star All-American game a couple years ago in 2017. Did not play a single minute at Western Kentucky. Could be a first-round pick, 7 feet tall, big wingspan. And Anfernee Simons, he wanted to go to Louisville. As we mentioned, Louisville's had some problems, so he left there, went to IMG Academy, will probably become the first U.S.-born post-grad student to enter the draft since the league implemented its age restriction back in 05. So Porter, Robinson, Simons, you say one and done. I'd say not very many at all and done. They could all be first-round picks this year.
Wow. Matt?
I would say we're looking at, briefly here at the top next year, but actually it's a fairly clear picture maybe outside of Nova. But, man, like Kansas, who is Gary Parrish's preseason number one, loses a ton. Number two, Duke, loses basically everyone on their starting lineup. They had Nova three for now. That's before. I guess he was thinking that Spellman would be gone, DiVincenzo would stay, and now they're probably both gone, and maybe Spellman stays. But then, yeah, Kentucky, actually, it's funny, like at number five, had the most, or number four, Tennessee, which, man, that feels high. Even with everything they returned, I think they overachieved a little bit and will actually go the other way. And then number five, Kentucky, actually might be the most stable, given that they probably will return Quade Green, PJ Washington, Nick Richards, and then bring in Kyle Parr's best class in about 3-4 years. So, like, looking at that, unless everything clicks in Kentucky, it's going to be wide open next year. And good luck picking a Final Four champion, man. Like, all these teams, I see pitfalls, and I don't see quite the upsides that even I saw from Nova last year.
Well, as we get next couple of weeks here, we'll know who's finally going to be in the NBA draft, who isn't. So it'll be pretty interesting, and we could finally start making a little bit of a preseason predictions, but maybe not for me quite this early. Rocco, your thoughts, though?
Yeah, looking forward to that. It's a little bit more fun to do preseason predictions than try to decipher what's going on with the sport. But just a couple last quick thoughts on the topics we covered. So the five-year probation period that the Condoleezza Rice Commission recommended for anybody that would violate their recommendations, I just don't – that doesn't sit well with me, basically because the NCAA, especially in recent years – they've had all the evidence to bust some major programs and really done nothing about it. And I think the reason why is because they realize how big of an impact that would be to them as a business. And the NCAA, at the end of the day, like I said before, is a business. So I think the only programs that would really suffer from that type of ruling would be are maybe some stronger mid-major or low-major programs. And it would just suffocate those programs. And I really just could not envision the NCAA, at least where we sit today, giving a probation like that to a major program. So that's one final thought. And then the second one would be this name, image, likeness, you know, it goes back to the Ed O'Bannon winning his lawsuit. Players being able to receive income for that and coming up with some type of hybrid that would work similar to the Olympic model will have to happen at some point. I know the NCAA's mission is to push this kick the can down the road as they can, so they don't have to deal with it. But I'd say probably in the next 2-3 years, they're going to have to allow some type of like sponsorships or at least get them money for being in commercials, things of that nature.
David, you want to finish us off?
Yeah. One of the things that they kind of missed on was a couple things. Like, the transfer rate is growing and growing and growing, and I think what's lost on most people is that 60% of Div 1 transfers don't actually go to Div 1 schools. They go down. And one of the problems that I see isn't so much at the top and the one and dones. It's at the other end where you have so many players leaving programs, oftentimes because they're being forced out or because that they walked into a situation that just didn't work out. And I think if you want to look at fixing college basketball as a whole, why wasn't that addressed? And we talk about amateurism, they shouldn't be paid, the purity of the game. Well, okay, we don't want to pay them because of amateurism, so why are we allowed to basically fire them? And in my opinion, I strongly believe that the majority of transfers, and it's not all of them, we all know it's not all of them, but the vast majority of them happen because coaches run players off or take their scholarships away. That wasn't even addressed, and I was really disappointed that they didn't even it wasn't even on their radar. And they were, again, were tasked with fixing college basketball. And they didn't. They led with something that affects almost no one. The second thing they should have recommended, you know, they recommended getting rid of the one-and-done rule. Well, why didn't they recommend that the NCAA also get rid of the NBA draft? That would have made about as much sense and been just about as easy to make happen.
Well, I guess on that note, I just want to throw one other piece of news I actually think was just announced either yesterday or today. The APR scores for the upcoming year have come out. And actually, we only have one team that's going to be ineligible coming up next year. Alabama A&M is the only team that with postseason ineligibility, which is a record since only one team since the APR came into effect. So congrats to everybody else out there, including Missouri, who barely made the cut. But I guess on that note, I do want to thank you for joining us. We'll be back in sometime in June with our next podcast. But on behalf of John Titel, Rocco Miller, Matt Sikowski, David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.